Hello everyone and welcome back to the MTG Novels Project. The MTG Novels Project is available both on YouTube and as a podcast version. Check the description for more details. A legal note, this is an unofficial audiobook with original content belonging to Wizard of the Coast. Its content is covered under the 2017 Wizard of the Coast fan content policy. Listener discretion is advised. Today we continue with Chapter 13 of Planeswalker by Lynn Abbey. Summer had come to the Ohran Ridge, some 2 months after Retepe arrived. Grass in every shade of green rippled in the wind, beneath a blue crystal sky. Xantia's sphere rose easily, caught a westward breeze, and began its journey to the Efruen Pinkar. "Do you think this is going to work?" Retepe asked when the cottage had disappeared into their folded foothills. She didn't answer. Retepe gave her a sulky look, which she also ignored. Still sulking, he began to rearrange their traveling gear. Xantia's head brushed the inner curve. Retepe, who was a head taller, was at a greater disadvantage. With a dramatic show of determination, he shoved the largest and heaviest box behind them and upholstered it with food sacks. Those efforts made the sphere easier to maneuver. If he didn't settle down, Xantia thought she might finish the journey alone. "I don't think I've ever had cushions up here before," she said, trying to be pleasant, hoping pleasantry would be enough to calm her companion. "I do what I can," he replied, still sulking. Retepe had a flair for solving problems, but didn't seem to depend on the images he gleaned from Urza's weak stone eye. Even Urza had noticed it and made a point of discussing things with him that she'd never mentioned to Xantia. Xantia told herself that this was exactly what she wanted, an Urza who paid attention to the world around him. Of course, Urza thought he was talking to his long-dead brother. Retepe, though he played his part of the conversation well, wanted more than conversation. These days, Retepe's mind swam in the memories of a man who'd been Urza's peer in Artiface. He'd absorbed all the theories of artifact creation, but as clever he was with sacks and boxes, he was awkward at the work table. Perhaps if he'd been willing to start with simple things. But if Retepe had a temperance for easy beginnings, the weak stone probably would have ignored him, as it had always ignored Xantia. He tried pure magic where Xantia had been certain he would succeed. Urza always said that magic was rooted in the land. Retepe's devotion to the Efruen Pinkar was the touchstone of his life, and magic often came both late and sudden into a mortal's life. But it wouldn't enter Retepe's. No matter how earnestly he invited it, the lowest blow, however, had come after he'd badgered Urza into concocting another cyst. Retepe had gulped the lump down without a heartbeat hesitation and writhed in agony for 2 days before he let Urza dissolve it. One artifact poisoning wasn't enough. He tried twice more until Urza, who knew something in the Phantom's death, being that Retepe was an ordinary young man and not his brother, refused to brew up another one. "I don't mind doing the heavy work," Xantia said. The sphere was moving nicely on its own. She laid her hand on his arm. "I like the company, the friendship." Retepe was more than a friend, though both of them were careful not to put the difference into words. The cottage only had two worms. Her room only had one bed. The difference had come suddenly. One moment they were alone, ignoring another rainy night. The next they were on the bed, staring near each other, then touching. "For warmth," he said, and Xantia had agreed, as if curiosity had never gotten her in trouble before. As if she hadn't known the difference between curiosity and need, and being coldly willing to take advantage of it. It had been awkward at first. Xantia was, as she'd warned, a Phyrexian newt, a vat-grown creature whose purpose had never been to love another or beget children. But Retepe was nothing if persistent in its face of challenge, and the problems, although inconvenient, had been surmounted without artifice or magic. He was satisfied. Xantia was surprised, astonished beyond all the words in the language she knew, to discover that being in love had nothing to do with being born. Ratepi laced his fingers through hers. I could do more. You never made good on your threat to make me cook my own food. There's only one hearth, and I haven't had time to make another. That's what I mean. Ratepi tightened his hands. You do everything. Urza doesn't notice, but I do. You're the one who makes the decisions. Zancha laughed. You don't know Urza very well. I don't know him at all. If you hadn't decided to bring me here, I wake up in the morning, and for a few moments I think I'm back in Efu and Pekar with my family. And it's all been a dream. I think about telling my little brother. Then I look over at you. She made an unnecessary adjustment to the sphere's drift, an excuse to reclaim her hand. Urza's coming back to life, letting go of his obsessions. That's your doing. But Pepe sighed. I hadn't noticed. But Tepe, like Misha, had a tendency to sulk. Zanja had reread the Antiquity Wars, looking for ways to buoy up his spirits. She'd even asked Urza what could put an end to Ratepi or Misha's black, self-defeating moods. Silence, Urza had replied, had always been the best tactic when his brother sulked. Misha couldn't bear to be ignored. Be patient. Outwait him, and his quicksilver temper would find another target. Zanja had learned endurance without mastering patience. For the first time in 2.5 centuries, Urza's work table isn't covered with mountains. He's making artifacts again. Zanja thumped the box behind her. New artifacts. Not the same gnats. He pays attention when you talk to him. Why do you think we're going to Efren Pekar? To appease me? To keep me in my place? Zanja's temper rose. Don't be ridiculous. No. I've done what you wanted. He calls me Misha, and I answer. I listen to the weak stove. I remember things I never lived. And no one should have lived. When you or he says that I'm so much like Misha by Avahir book, I want to go outside and smash my skull against a rock. It's no compliment to be compared with a cold-blooded murderer, and that's what they both are, Zancha. That's what they always were. They care more about things than people. But I don't do it, because all I've got to replace everyone is when I've lost you. You asked me to be Misha, so I am. All I've asked of Urza is that he care enough to send a few of his precious artifacts to Efren Pekar. He does. He has. We're taking these to Pinkar City, aren't we? Admit it. You'd rather be rooting around in Besserat or Morvern. You've been down here, what, 7, 8 times? 6. And you could have come. The lines are clear there. Urza recognizes the strategies. It's all your war all over again. Just smaller. Not my war, damn it. If I was going to fight a war, it wouldn't be in Besserat or Morvern. Zancha made the sphere tumble and swerve. But those tricks no longer work. Ratepi had overcome his fear of the open sky. He kept his balance as easily as she did, and knew perfectly well that she was wasn't going to let them drop to the ground. You're wasting your time. Get rid of the Phyrexians at Besserat or Morvern, and they'll keep fighting each other. That's what they do. And Efuns are so much better than the Besserati swine and Morvernish sheep? Or have I got that backwards? Are the Besserati the shrine or the sheep? They're all pig keepers. Belatedly, Zancha clapped her teeth together and said nothing. She would have taken Urza's advice, hard as ignoring Tepe was, when they couldn't get more than the hands bent apart. The sphere came around 2 long tacks before he saw fit to speak again. Do you think it will work? The same question he'd asked as they riven up from the cottage, but the whiny edge was gone from his voice. Zancha risked an answer. Maybe. The artifact will work. There'll be our eyes and ears and noses in the walls. We'll find where the Phyrexians are. And if we know that... I apologize. We'll know when they're in the Red Stripes, and we'll know the Red Stripes are doing the Shrada's work. If there are any Shrada left, I want to go to Pinkar City and get you to the Avahir's Temple. I want to know what kinds of oils you smell there. I want you in the palace. So I'll know what happened to Taberna. Has he become another Misha? A man on the outside? A Phyrexian on the inside? Avahir's mercy. I was so certain Urza would listen when I said, brother, don't let the Phyrexians do another man what they did to me. And what was his response? Pebbles. We're going to scatter pebbles and come back. Who knows when, and see if any of the pebbles have changed color. Ratepi took a breath and began speaking in a dead imitation of Urza. That way I'll know for certain if my enemy has come to Efren Pekar. Sometimes I'm not sure he is Urza. Maybe he was once someone like me. The Mightstone took over his life. Avahir. If a man's a murderer, what's the use of conscience? During the war, the real Urza and the real Misha both made hunter-killers. None of his pebbles on the path, wait-and-see nonsense. They went right after each other. Urza doesn't want to repeat his old mistakes. Waste not, want not. She was still defending Urza with every argument that she had infuriated her for a millennia. The situation in Efruin Picard is different. He's not sure what's going on, so he's being careful. And putting all his effort into Bazarat and Morvern. Ever here. How many Efruin villages have to burn before they're important? I wouldn't know, Sancha snarled. Damer is the only world he's ever come back to. Every place else he's just walked off and left it to its fate. Erza may not be doing what you'd like him to do, but he is doing something. He listens to you, Atepe. He's never really listened to anyone before. You should be pleased with yourself. Not while my people are dying. Urza's got the power, Sancha, and the obligation to use it. Sancha was going to mutter something about men who put ideals first, but resisted the impulse. Prickly science persisted throughout the afternoon. She brought the spear down with the sun. Retepe made an aberrative attempt to set up their camp, but they weren't ready to talk civilly to each other. Sancha banished him to the nearby trees until she got the fire lit. The sky was radiant lavender before she went looking for her troublesome companion. Retepe had seated himself in the west, facing bole of a falling tree. Sancha got no reaction as she approached, and was rekindling her irritation when she realized his cheeks were wet. Compli at first didn't cry, but Newt sometimes did, until they learned it didn't help. Supper's on the fire. Retepe realized he'd been weeping and wiped his face, roughly on his sleeves before meeting her eyes. I'm not hungry. Still angry with me? He turned west again. The sea stars above the sun. The festival of fruits is over. A single yellow star shone in the lavender. Baralulu, she said, giving it the old Argavian name that Urza used. It would be another week before it rose high enough to be seen from the cottage. I'm 18. Born folk, both mortal and having parents, and usually living their whole lives on a single world, kept close track of their ages. Is that a significant age? She asked politely. Some years are more important than others. Retepe swallowed and spoke in a husky voice. You and Urza don't live by any calendar. One day's the same as the next. There isn't any reason. I forgot my birthday. It must have been 3, maybe 4 days ago. Last year we were together. My mother roasted a duck. My little brother gave me a honey cake that was full of sand. My father gave me a book. Sapulin's Philosophy. The Strata burnt it. For them, there's only one book. Or it wasn't the Strata, but the Rebstites doing Strata work who burned it. It got burned. That's enough. Burned and gone. Retepe hid his face in his hands as memory got the better of him. Go away. You think about them. Go away, he repeated, then added. Please. Urza of grief had hardened into obsession. Sancha understood obsession. Retepe flowed free from his heart and mystified her. I could roast a duck for you. If I can find one, will that help? Not now, Sancha. I know you care, but not now. Whatever you say, it only reminds me of what's gone. She retreated. I'll be by the fire until it's good and truly dark. Then it'll come back here, and you will not come down. This is the wild country of Tepe, and you're not. The right word. The right word wouldn't defend him, failed to spring to his mind. I'm not what? Not clever enough to take care of herself? Not strong enough? Not immortal or a Phyrexian? They call me Retepe now, and you state that you love me. But I'm still a slave. Still rat. Agreeing with him would start a war. Come down to the far. I promise not to say anything. Sancha kept her promise, but it was difficult. Retepe wrapped himself in a blanket and curled up with his back to her. She couldn't easily count the nights she'd spent in silence and alone. None of them had seemed as long. When he stretched himself up awake after dawn, Sancha waited for him to speak first. I'm going down to the palace when you get to Pinkar. She hoped for a little less inflammatory start to the day. No, impossible. You agreed to stay at the inn with our supplies while I scattered Urza's pebbles into places where we don't want to find Phyrexians. Your task is to help me find Shrouda strongholds in the countryside once I'm done the Sidri. We need to know if there are any real Shrouda left. I know, but I'm going to the palace, straight to Diburna. If he's there, whether he's a man or something else, every Ephraim has the right to petition our king. If he's a man, I'll tell him the truth. Sansha planned to reply as she set aside a mug of cold tea. And if he isn't, she learned from Urza, truth and logic were worthless with madmen, and it was always better to let them rant until they ran themselves down. Then they'll kill me, and you'll have to tell Urza what happened, and maybe then he'll do something. She grimaced into her tea. That's a burden I don't want to carry. So let's assume you survive. Let's assume you're face to face with Diburna. What truth will you tell your kid? I'll tell him that the Ephraims must stop killing Ephraims. I'll tell Diburna what the right strokes I've done. Very bold. But with or without the Phyrexians, your king already knows what the websites are doing in the Shrouded name. He can't. Atape's voice trailed off. He'd seen too much in his short life to dismiss her out of hand. He must. Not Diburna. He wouldn't. If he's still in Pinkar City, if he's still a man, then he thinks what I thought, that all the Shrouda, he does know the truth. He can't. Xanja shipped her tea. All right, Rat. Let's assume you're right. The king of Ephraim Pekar, a man you think yourself, still sits on his throne. He doesn't know that there are Phyrexians among his Red Stripe guards. He doesn't know what those Red Stripe thugs have done. He doesn't know that in all likelihood the Shrouda were the first to be exterminated. If Diburna doesn't know any of them if this exists, then who else in Ephraim Pekar does? And how has this nameless, faceless person kept your king in Ingdurus all these years? Metepe's whole face tightened in an uncomfortable silence. No. Not a denial, but a prayer. Not Diburna. Best hope that Diburna is skin stretched over metal. You'd hurt less when the time comes. If you're not fighting a man who sold his soul to Phyrexia, in the meantime, until I know where the Phyrexians are and who they are, we'll rely on Ursa's pebbles, and you'll stay out of trouble and danger. Metepe wasn't happy, but he wasn't stupid either. After a slight nod, he busied himself folding his blanket. That day's journey was easier and much quieter. Metepe spent most of her time aloft staring at the horizon, but there were no tears, and Xanja let him be. Most of her journeys had been taken in silence, and though she'd quickly grown accustomed to Retepe's company and conversation, old habits returned quickly. She brought them over the Pinkar city walls in the darkness, between moonset and sunrise 6 days later. The sky was clear and the streets were deserted, and the guards they could see were more interested in staying awake until the end of their watch than in the dark speck moving across the sky. Xanja decided to risk a pass above the palace. Few things were as useful as a bird's eye view of unfamiliar territory. A few slow-moving servants were at work in the courtyards, getting a jump on their chores before the sun rose. Sea breezes and frequent showers kept the coastal city livable in the summer, but the air was always moist, and if a person had a choice, work was easier done before the dawn than in the mid-afternoon. Xanja was building a mind map of the royal apartments. Servant quarters and bureaucratic halls were in a Pepe tub on their sleeve and drew her to attention. His list touched her hair as he whispered, "Trouble." 6 men, cloaked head to toe but otherwise unmarked, led their horses towards the postern gate, the palace's private gate. Perhaps it wasn't anything significant. Palace throughout the multiverse had similarly placed gates because royal affairs sometimes required the sort of discretion that others might call deceit. But when it was still dark, there was no danger of being seen. Xanja wove her fingers and the sphere floated behind the men. The tide was out, exposing a narrow, rocky split between the ocean and the harbor. The not unpleasant tang of seaweed and salt water permeated the sphere. Xanja took a deep breath. No glistening oil. Whoever the 6 close men were, they weren't Phyrexian. Messengers, she decided softly, and the sphere began to drink blackwards with the sea breeze. Follow them. They're nothing, Rat. They're trouble. I smell it. She knew she could detect Phyrexians by scent. She knew his nose wasn't sensitive. You can't smell trouble. You can't see it either. We've got to find an alley where we can set ourselves down without drawing a crowd. Xanja, please. I've just got a feeling about them. I want to know where they're going. I'll stay at the inn. I won't give you any hassle. Just follow them. No complaints when they're stuck hiding in the gully somewhere until after sunset. Not a word. Not a sound or gesture either, she grumbled, but she shifted her hands, and they scooted over the palace wall. Their quarry stayed along their shoreline, out of sight, and the guards on the Pinkar walls. Watape was likely right. They weren't up to any good, but that also could mean anything. Maybe even a meeting with Estrada. That would be worth knowing about, but she wasn't prepared for that confrontation. We're not getting involved, Sancho warned. They'd far and fall behind the six men that Sancho wasn't worried about being overheard. She did worry about the sun. Domeyra was in a world where large man-made objects routinely whizzed through the skies. Urza's artifactor, ornithopters, like Urza himself, were remembered mostly for their wrong-headedness. She'd followed men for days and never been noticed, but men who were, as Repe proclaimed, trouble, tended to look over their shoulders frequently and might notice a shadow where one shouldn't be. Not unless we have to. No, unless it's that. We're not getting involved. We got more than we had when you sent me to a burning village. True enough, since she knew there were frictions loose in Ephraim Picard, Sancha had flattened their arsenal with a variety of exploding artifacts and a pair of fireplots. Having protection wasn't the same as using it. She hadn't survived all these centuries by blundering into someone else's trouble. We're following them, that's all. In a very likely event that they'll meet with a Phyrexian demon. I'll think about it. She thought about as long as it took to spin the sphere around and push it with all her might towards the opposite horizon. Although Sancha and Watape could still see the city walls, Dryers had reached a point where they were beyond the Pinkar guard's sight. Accordingly, they mounted and galloped their horses south. They're in a hurry, Watape said, as Sancha pushed the lotus sphere to its limit. I wonder where they're going. Not far. Not at that speed. The laden sphere couldn't keep pace. It lost sight of the riders, but another dust cloud their horses raised. Sancha took the opportunity to tack behind them and be in the east with the sun when they came up. You said you'd follow them, Matepe said as the sphere veered sunwards. You said no complaints. If we're on their tails. We're on their sun side flank. It's safer. Trust me. As expected, the horses slowed. The dust ebbed, and the sphere carried Watape and Sancha close enough to see that the men had reined in at the grassy edge of an abandoned orchard and dismounted. That's odd, Sancha muttered. A warrior sunrise ceremony? She'd seen far stranger traditions. Sancha had no idea or comments. Perhaps he was feeling foolish, or thinking about the long day ahead of him, hankering down in a gully, forbidden by his honor to complain. Sancha tapped him on the shoulder. See that spot down on the grass? She pointed at a dark spot in the west. Watape nodded. That's our shadow. I want you to keep a watch on it. And if I get careless, it gets close to those men, or especially their horses, I want you to tell me. We're going in for a close look. I can see that you were right, and I'm a fool. Let's find some shade. The sun's coming up, and I'm sweating already. Keep an eye on our shadow. Sancha kept the sun squarely on their backs as they floated closer. There's no real danger. She'd been seen somewhere else, even shotted with arrows and spears, none of which could pierce the sphere. Sorcerers were more of a problem, but sorcerers were the power to damage one of Urza's artifacts were almost easy to detect as Phyrexians, and rarer than Phyrexians in Ephraim Picard. As they approached hearing distance, Sancha remembered reminded Watape to be quiet, and brought the sphere into the orchards nearest the men who were trampling the grass in a rough circle around the pattern 10 paces across. She didn't like what she saw. If you sincerely believe in your God, she said startly, start praying that I'm wrong. What? She held a finger to her lips. Watape wasn't successful with his prayers. Forever here, the all-powerful Ephraim God was listening elsewhere that morning. They hadn't hovered among the trees very long when one of the men pulled something black, shiny, and dish-shaped from his saddlebags. Sancha made a shift with her fist with non-navigational hands and swore in the lilting language of a pink sky world where curses were considered art. Trouble? Watape asked. The six men had each grabbed a disc and were beginning to stretch it along the trampled grass. Not the way she'd learned to open an ambulator, but it had been nearly 2,000 years since she'd last seen one. Undoubtedly, there had been changes. Big trouble. We're going to get involved. That's the pathway to Phyrexia they're rolling out. Maybe they're going to visit the Ineffable. But more likely, they're sleepers coming in. And we're going to stop them. Or die trying. You understand me? Sancha sees her temporary soldiers and forces them to look at her. We either stop these men, or you make damn sure you don't survive. Because sleepers won't come through alone. And anything else that comes through that ambulator, you don't ever want to meet. He went bloodless pale beneath his sweat, and neither nodded nor spoken. Understand? What can I do? They're not watching their backs. If we're lucky, we can set up the fire pots. Then you keep dropping Urza's toys on them, one after another. Gotepe nodded, and Zacha curled her fingers, raising the sphere slightly, then backing off to the far edge of the orchard, out of the sight of the six men, but well within the fire pot's range. She brought it down carefully. The thump of their supplies hitting the ground as the fear collapsed wasn't loud enough to disturb the birds in the nearest trees. Zancha kissed Rat Tepe once before she yawned out a layer of armor that would make affection pointless. The fire pots were tubes roughly shaped like a man's boot, with the important difference that when Zancha unleashed them, their full-laton linings glowed. Shame them from memory. Clothes would be good enough when the canisters they were using. If she plied the first Fisk says canisters at Rotepe's feet, and dumped a pair, one filled with compressed naphtha, the other filled with glass shards, into the rapidly heating fire pots. She handed Rotepe her smaller coin pouch. Anyone gets too close, don't bother with your swords. Just throw one of those at him and duck. And then the fire pots let loose. It was time to draw her sword and run. The Ephraims were sword-armed, but not armored. Sancha planned to take one, maybe two of them by surprise, and hoped that the firepots would do the same. But no, mostly, she hoped that the Ephraims would abandon the ambulator before she spat out reinforcements. The first part of her plan went well. She made a man charge into the trees, struggling to draw swords. Sancha slew him with a slight cut across the gut. It was loud and messy, but successful. One down, five to go. The firepots, whose trajectory was more height than distance, delivered both of Urza's exploding artifacts within 20 paces of the ambulator. They spooked the horses. All six had torn free and bolted, but the naphtha had fallen beyond the black pool, and the glass hadn't disabled any of the four men. Two still at work, anchoring the ambulator, two with their swords drawn and coming after her, that Zancha could see. Two more canisters came hissing out of the morning sunlight. One fell in the rippling pool and vanished before it exploded. No time to imagine where it could have gone, or what it might accomplish when it arrived. The second spread more glass shards near the two men working on the portal's rim. If she survived, Sancha planned to tell Urza that glass shards weren't effective against influence. Though bloodied and clearly in pain, the pair stayed put. 4 plus 1 was only 5. Sancha hoped Rotepe remembered the coins. Then she put him out of his mind. The swordsmen positioned themselves between her and the other pair of Ephraims. She knew what they saw. An undersized youth with an undersized sword and no apparent armor. She knew it would take advantage of the misconception. Her arm trembled. The tip of her sword pointed at the ground, and then she ran at the near pair. He thought he could beat her attack aside with a simple parry. That was her last mistake. The other thought it was an easy stroke across the back of her neck. He struck hard enough to drop Zancha to one knee, but he'd been expecting more and failed to press what little advantage he had. Zancha pivoted on her knee, got her wrist behind the hilt, and thrust the blade up through his stomach to his heart. She left the sword, her sword, in the corpse, and took up his instead. Of the two remaining Ephraims, one was on his knees, fussing with the ambulator, while the other stood guard over him. Black-on-black powders flowed across the portal surface. Zancha didn't dare run across it. She could smell Phyrexia as the Ephraim beat aside her first attack. He was the best of the men she'd faced so far, and respectful. He stayed calm and balanced between his sword and not in any hurry. Zancha was in a hurry and led with her empty, off-weapon hand, seizing his sword midway down the blade. It was a risky move. Urza's armor couldn't make her bigger or heavier than she naturally was. She couldn't always maintain her grip, and more than once she'd wound up with a dislocated shoulder. This time, surprise and luck were with her, at least long enough to plunge her sword in the swordsman's gut before she shoved him backward, off the blade and into the black pool. She kicked a kneeling Ephraim in the chin. Not a crippling, much less a killing blow, except that he too fell backwards into the now-seeing ambulator. Two more exploding artifacts had arrived. One was simply loud and hurled her backwards, away from the ambulator, but still the exact direction she wanted to move. The other was fire that spread evenly across the black surface. Sancho staggered back to the place where the last of the blonde had been kneeling, a place where she expected to find a palm-sized pattern with seven black jewels. The police had changed the design. There was neither pattern nor jewels. In their place, Sancho saw smooth black stone, like Urza's magnifying lens, or like the ambulator itself. The fire still burnt. Nothing had emerged. She brought her stone down in the sword. The sword shattered. The fire vanished as if someone had inhaled it, and the black and black pattern turned silver. Run to Vatepe, she yelled as loud as the armor permitted and ignored her own advice. A Phyrexian emerged from the black pool moments later. It was a priest of some sort. There was too much metal. All of it articulated for it to be anything less than a searcher. Definitely not the scrap bait tender or teacher Zancha had expected with a band of sleepers. It had a triangular head with faceted eyes, a bit like Urza's gemstones, though large enough that she couldn't have covered one with sprayed fingers. The Zai needed improvement. The priest raised a nozzle-tipped arm and exterminated a flying bird an instant after it fully erupted, but ignored Zancha, who crouched unmoving among 3 paces on the ambulator's edge. The nozzle arm was also new to Zancha. She thought she'd seen a thin black thread reach out to the bird, but attack had been so quick that she couldn't be sure of anything except the bird had disappeared in a burst of red light. Nothing, not even a feather, had fallen from the sky. No doubt Zancha could find out exactly what it could do, and since the priest's arms was mismatched, what surprise lurked on the other side. Urza's arms had never failed. Over here, meatling. Few epaulets would get a priest's attention quicker than calling it a newt. Zancha stood up, brandishing her broken sword. The nozzle weapon sent something very sharp, very hot at the hollow of Zancha's neck, and she felt as if it had come through her spine. Urza's armor flashed a radiant cobalt blue, astonishing both her and the priest. What is your place? The priest demanded through the mouth parts hidden within its triangular head. It was not an adventure, modeled after predatory fashions. It was, despite its weapons, a thinker, a planner. Zancha! The right arm came up and shot forth a segmented cable, the tip of which was a fast-spinning flower with razor petals. It struck Zancha's face. She felt bones give, but the flower took greater damage. Steel petals clattered to the ground, and pulses of glistening oil spurted from the still-spinning hub. Zancha struck quickly with the broken sword, enveloping the cable and yanked hard. It had 2 metal legs and a top-heavy torso. In the Phyrexia she remembered, such bipedal priests had a tendency to topple, and it nearly did, although nearly was worse than not at all. Zancha had simply pulled it closer, and it lashed the shovel cable arms at its right around her waist. It began using its metal arms as club. Zancha could neither retreat nor make good use of her sword. Her right elbow got clobbered and broken within the armor. She managed to get the sword free of the cable and transferred it to her left hand before her right went numb within the armor. Zancha took the only strike she had, a sideways swipe at the priest's right eye. 2 more of Urza's casters rained down. One was concussive. The other screamed so loud that Zancha's ears hurt through the armor. Together, the casters jarred something loose inside the priest. Glistening oil poured from the downward point of its triangle head. It struck one final time, another blow to her already mangled elbow. They truly had no imagination before it expired. He'd saved her life. Vatepe, summoned Medea, had saved her life. The damn fool either hadn't heard her shout or most likely had ignored it. Zancha right free of the cable. Numbness had spread up her right arm to her shoulder. She'd survive. Urza himself had said that Phyrexian new stability healed itself as nothing left than miraculous, but she wasn't looking forward to releasing the armor and wasn't considering doing it until she dealt with the ambulator. She got down on her knees and cursed. New designs or no, the black pool in front of her was definitely at the nether end of the ambulator, and unless she wanted to poke her head into Phyrexia to loosen the prime end, there's no way Zancha could destroy it completely. But she could make it very dangerous to use if she could get it rolled and find some way to break or reset the black lens. She had half the rim anchored when yet another pair of casters showered her glass and fire. Enough already! She moved on to the next anchor, Vatepe arrived most later. Zancha, stay away, she warned harshly. The pain was bearable, but numbness was making her groggy. She could have used help, but not from someone who was pure mortal flesh. It's not done. Not yet. I told her to run. Zancha realized she must have looked broken. She must have looked bad. Broken bones bruising her face, her right arm, mangled and useless. Don't worry about me. I'll be fine in a couple days. Just get away from here. More can come through, even now. Make yourself unnoticeable. I've to create an inconvenience. I'll help. You'll hide. She popped another anchor. The pool rippled, black on black. Vatepe retreated, but not far. She didn't have the strength to argue with him. There. By the priest. You see a little black glass circle thing. Don't touch it. Don't touch anything. But think about breaking that glass. Sancho cried to the next excerpt. Priest? Shraddha? No. She pulled out the heap of metal that had been in the Phyrexian and went to work on the other anchor. Another 8 or 10 and she'd have it loose. Merciful Avazir, Sancho. What is it? Phyrexian. A priest. I don't know what kind. Something new since I left. That's what we're fighting. Except that's a priest, and not a Phyrexian meant for fighting. Not like you, then. Zancha looked up. He's bent over reaching out. I said, don't touch it. He straightened. I'm not a fighter. I'm not anything. A newt. Nothing started. Nothing completed. Just a newt. The six. I killed the last one myself. With those coins you left me. She hadn't heard the explosion. Well, it'd be another thing in her mind. They called this a priest? They invited here to Efren Picard? Great trouble, just like you said. And don't kid yourself. Assume they've got more ambulators. She remembered the upright disc in the Moag temple. Assume they've got worse. Assume some of the sleepers are awake. That there are priests inside the palace. And that some of your own have been corrupted. Starting with your king. Sancha released another anchor. Look at the glass, will you? My soul broke when I hit it. A moment or two of silence later. Then she was down to the last three anchors when Pepe said, I've got an idea, and ran to the trees. He came back with one of the fire pots and the rest of Urza's canisters. We can put in one of the pots of the bangers. Put it on top of it and let it rip. All of the anchors were up, and Zancha had no better idea, except to send Vatepe to the far end of the orchard before she followed his suggestions. Afterward, she remembered flying through the air and landing in a tree. Thank you for listening to Chapter 13, A Planeswalker. Please like, subscribe, and follow on YouTube and your chosen podcast platform.